On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're starting with a higher ed economic fallout from COVID-19 with Republican State Representative Amy Loudenbeck of Clinton on the line. Latest estimates by the UW system have losses at $212 million through the summer. Earlier this month, Wisconsin private colleges and universities estimated they'll lose $245 million in revenues this year due to the pandemic. Join in on Wisconsin's financial situation, what you want state lawmakers to work on. What do you see the most urgent need? We're at 800-642-1234. Representative Amy Loudenbeck is a member of the Joint Finance Committee that oversees the state budget. Representative, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Before we look at the budget, I want to touch on the UW system here, naming Tommy Thompson as interim president. You're an alumna of UW-Madison. What do you think?
I'm thrilled. I think that the leadership of Governor Thompson is going to be critical at this time. I know he loves the UW system and UW-Madison just like I do, and his heart is going to be with Wisconsin and doing what's best for our state. I thought about this, you know, you talk about onboarding a new candidate or bringing someone in from out of state. Well, there is not going to be any onboarding with Governor Thompson. If people aren't on board with Tommy, they're going to need to get on board. And I think that it's going to really accelerate the transition that we're going through for the semester while they go ahead and find a new president. But I think it's a great choice, and I'm looking forward to his leadership.
Well, earlier this month, System President Ray Cross called on lawmakers to hold a special session to authorize more borrowing for the UW. Would you support expanding credit there, the UW system's ability to borrow during the pandemic?
Well, we have looked at, I've been on the finance committee for three terms and in office for five terms, and we've looked at the restructuring, the decentralization, the some of the different opportunities with the UW, and we kind of always come back to the model that that keeps the University of Wisconsin system tighter to the state. Maybe that's something that we can be convinced. I think at the end of the day, just like with any other time, if you're looking at your pocketbook or anything else, before you go out and borrow, we need to make sure we're looking at every opportunity to lower expenses and make sure that we have that long-term financial health.
Even if the state would not be on the hook for this borrowing?
Correct.
President Cross also asked lawmakers to eliminate some of the regulatory issues and the disclosures that have to be submitted to joint finance. What do you see there? Do you think that would provide any relief? Would you agree with that?
There are some flexibilities, and I understand, just like whether it's a business or anything, the regulatory reporting. The Finance Committee, we do read these reports that are sent to us, and they are very helpful. But if there are ways that we can streamline that or make sure that we have the relationship where we can get easy access and to things that we want to see, I think that we would be able to waive some of those requirements. I know in the past we have looked at waiving some of the building commission oversight from the Department of Administration. There are ways they can be more efficient and save money, if the state is willing to allow them to do that. And those kinds of flexibilities I would be much more open to.
One of the requirements is that schools don't start until after September 1st. Would you as a lawmaker be open to easing that particular mandate?
I would. This is me speaking personally, not on behalf of my caucus or any other legislator. But when I look at the statute, and I mean, as the student that went there, I mean, they have started so many different postdoctoral and other programs early. I don't think, like with schools, if a school starts early and they are told not to, we can withhold state shared revenue, and DPI can do that. I don't think anyone is going to push back against the UW system if they start sooner, even if the law says differently. And that's a conversation that like I said, I have had internally with myself and looking at paperwork. But like I said, they are part and parcel of the state. And I think we could arrange some sort of a waiver, perhaps, if we don't need to go in and come in and have a special session. But I would be open to it.
The UAW system accounted for most of the $70 million in budget cuts ordered by Governor Evers in May. Do you agree with the governor's cost-cutting measures here so far?
Well, I mean, some of the money that has been saved is real dollars. Some of it is dollars that are deferred or refinanced, and I'm not going to get into the mechanics of that because it's a measure that has been used in the past to sort of get to that to the bottom line. What we have to remember is this is just the first set of cuts and adjustments that he needs to make, and so using those tools, that's kind of the low-hanging fruit. Like, there's going to have to be some more significant and intentional adjustments to the budget, I think, based on the revenue numbers that we're getting. And I know that he's directed the agencies to do a flat budget, and I think that all those things are smart. But I'm not going to disagree with any individual decisions that the governor has made, but I just think that we need to be a little bit more aggressive, probably.
Yeah, where do you anticipate deeper cuts in government services? Where are you looking?
I'm not necessarily saying that we need to do cuts. What I'm telling my school districts, for example. So I'm meeting with my superintendents within my assembly district, and when they want to know, you know, what to expect, I'm going to indicate to them that I would expect budgets to remain flat, and any increases that they were expecting in year two, that they should probably not, they should pencil in maybe the number for year one and not anticipate the growth in year two. I'm hoping that we can maintain, but a lot of those built-in increases that we have in year two, we may not be able to afford, and I'd like to encourage agencies and our partners at the schools, at the school district level, to look at those year two numbers and think of that as, we're not sure we can do that yet, so let's maybe just look back at the base year.
We're talking about state spending and politics with Representative Amy Loudenbeck, a Republican from Clinton who sits on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. What questions do you have for Representative Loudenbeck? Do you live in Elkhorn or Walworth or Clinton, another South Central Wisconsin community? What questions do you have? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Representative, on the State Capitol Report a couple weeks ago, Democratic Senator Janet Buley was with us, and she criticized Republicans for not approving state dollars for pandemic-related aid. Let's take a listen.
The state has not committed a penny to any program to help in COVID. It is money that was either already in the budget or it's federal money, but no new dollars. They refused to commit Wisconsin money to any of the programs.
What is your response there to Senator Buley?
My response to Senator Buley is the law states that any federal dollars that come through are at the discretion of the governor. We received over $2 billion. We just found out really last week we got the details on how those dollars were going to be allocated. They haven't all even been spent. So my response would be, we don't know that we need to spend money. We don't have it necessarily. And so we are not going to continue. We are not going to pile on or add to what has already been committed before we have a full picture.
So you wouldn't draw from Wisconsin's emergency budget reserves yet until you see where the federal dollars are going exactly?
Correct.
And so what is the timeline for that? How long does it take to put the federal dollars in place and then know where Wisconsin should provide more resources?
As I mentioned, we just found out, so it was, I think it was a week or two ago, I'm going to use the example of the hospitals and the healthcare system. So the CARES Act had appropriations that they directly distributed to healthcare providers from the federal government. And we knew that that probably wasn't going to be enough. And then looking at that, Governor Evers, just 2 weeks ago, indicated that he was going to take another, I believe it was $40 million, and provide direct assistance to these healthcare providers. And so we're just, and so that was an area where we knew that was lacking. I mean, with healthcare providers unable to provide routine medical services and increased costs and associated with PPE and things like that. But we just found that out 2 weeks ago. We just found out about long-term care facilities, how much that was going to be about 3 or 4 weeks ago. The grants to small businesses were announced about 5 or 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago maybe, but the opening up of the applications was only 2 weeks ago. So some of this money is not out, most of this money is not out the door. And so until we have more information, I know that we're even, the governor has even stated he's holding back $445 million for a hospital and community preparedness reserve. So I would look at those reserve dollars before spending state GPR that we are already committed to spending for schools, local units of government, university system, corrections, all of our other priorities.
And where would you like to direct the CARES Act funding? Where do you want to see it going?
Well, that's a great question, but it's one that I have not spent a whole lot of time looking at because the legislature does not have anything, doesn't have the ability to craft that plan. One of the things that I wanted to make sure, I mentioned hospitals and long-term care facilities. I am very concerned about our local units of government having their first responders supported, their emergency responders that are having to do a lot of extra work with PPE and decon and extra calls and making sure people are staying home when they're sick, which leads to overtime. All the same things that are straining other healthcare systems are straining local fire and EMS. And so that was one thing that I did make some suggestions. I also encouraged, and the governor's office agreed with me and perhaps others, that the money should be distributed on a per capita basis and not through the state shared revenue formula, because that formula is does not treat all communities equally.
And we'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Representative Amy Loudenbeck of Clinton on the line as we talk through a range of budget issues. Do you live in a South Central Wisconsin community? What questions do you have for Representative Loudenbeck? What questions do you have about the pandemic and how state authorities are responding? There's room for your insights, 800-642-1234. Representative, the state could get a clear picture of our financial health with the end of the fiscal year coming June 30th and then the extended tax deadline approaching. Do you see the legislature returning to vote on a budget repair bill this year?
That is another great question. It is entirely possible, but and I am aware of there are reasons to do it sooner and there are reasons to do it later, because the longer you wait, the clearer the picture that you have. But the sooner that you act, the more time that you have to absorb any budget adjustments instead of trying to make them all up in the last 6 months of the year. It would be a little earlier than normal. I mean, normally it would be when the legislature returns. And as you mentioned, the governor can make some of those adjustments on his own. But the discussions that we had have kind of broken down as far as my leadership with the governor's office. And so I'm not privy to what the plan is to try to turn that around. But it would be nice if we could agree on what the plan was. Budget repair bills used to be really common, and now they're not as common. And we've been trying to do a better job projecting. But this is something that we could not have seen coming, certainly. And as you mentioned, we'll have more information in July. By the time we start really analyzing those numbers, it's going to be into the fall. So maybe there's something that we could do in November or December. I don't know if we're going to be coming back right away in August to take care of that. It probably depends on how dire the situation is.
When you say things have broken down, is it talks that have broken down? What do you mean?
I think, and again, I am a little detached from Madison, just like everyone else is, being in my district more. But I do know that certainly the taping of the phone call with Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald was really something that from a trust standpoint that I think really damaged the relationship. And so I don't know when they intend to resume conversations, but again, if the governor introduces the budget repair bill, not the legislature. And so if we want to try to work together, that would be helpful. But if he wants to put out a budget repair bill and call us back in, we're gonna respond to that call as well.
And so on this taping, the governor says a staff member secretly recorded a conversation with lawmakers for note-taking purposes, and some lawmakers want the staffer fired. Do you support that position?
Yes, actually, if that person acted not under the direction or on their own direction, yes.
What do you think is wrong, though, about the public hearing, how lawmakers talk with each other? What, you know, would that transparency be worthwhile?
That transparency very well could be worthwhile. It's just a matter of that the law says that you can't do that if you don't have consent. You can't tape a conversation. And so breaking the law and perhaps committing a felony is a problem. Being transparent and having a meeting with on Zoom or anything else that the public can listen to, that's entirely up to the participants in the meeting.
We're discussing,
as long as they all are aware.
We're discussing state politics with Amy Loudenbeck, a Republican representative from Clinton, taking your calls 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to your district. The two counties you represent, Rock and Walworth, have among the state's highest infection rates per capita, ranking 6th and 7th for COVID-19. How well are your communities handling the situation?
Well, Rock and Walworth counties are very different in their styles and approaches to responding to COVID. And I will say that in response to when the Supreme Court overturned the Safer at Home order, Rock County immediately issued its own Safer at Home order, and Walworth County immediately issued 50-some pages of guidance and did not have an order. Now, then Rock County pulled back and sort of put out guidance, but it was the expectation of the guidance was that it would be looked at in a phased approach, just like other counties were doing that every 2 weeks. The city of Beloit has their own order. So both counties are looking at it very differently, and I can tell you even when I am out and about in counties, I think people are behaving a little bit differently, and that doesn't surprise me. It's my district. I know people have different challenges. I mean, we had Beloit particularly had some concentrations of cases, and they are watching the data very carefully, and they are responding in the way they see fit because that's what local governments can do. And so I don't represent the city of Lake Geneva. I know that they've had some, they've had a couple of things happen there. I've got Fontana. I know they control the numbers at the beach. I've seen the lines, things like that. And so, again, communities are taking their own approach, but Rock County is still more limited in their capacity and other things when you go out to businesses. A lot of places are still closed.
Do you find that your residents in your district need more support from the state?
The support they need from the state is to get their unemployment benefits paid. And that would help a lot of people that have been waiting a very long time. They are not asking for extra help.
And what do you see in the area of unemployment benefits? And
if I may add the caveat that, I mean, I'm going through with my school district some of the supplemental information that they're going to get from the CARES Act. But as far as individual people, what am I hearing? I'm hearing people that maybe they made a mistake when they first did their filing and they're just waiting for a call back to correct something where they read the question and it made it sound like, did they work or have a different job, or there's something in their history that's not completely perfect where you look back and you work the same place for 3 years, 40 hours a week, and it's there may be like a break in employment, something that needs to be answered, and they're just waiting for that call back and they're not getting it, and they can't get through on the phone lines.
I want to touch on schools because you've mentioned them a couple times here. We just spoke with Wisconsin's deputy state superintendent about the DPI new guidance to schools for returning this fall. How do you feel about students going back to the classrooms, you know, when there is no vaccine?
Well, I will tell you, I am not a parent, and I have not read the plan that DPI is going to be sharing and, you know, has started to kind of share. But I do know that parents that I talk to are anxious to have their kids go back to school, but they don't want them to be going back to school having to be in a plexiglass cube and are kind of concerned that it's going to just be really hard if they follow every guideline that they are hearing that they may have to follow. But at the same time, their kids really miss being in the classroom. They miss the classroom experience. They miss their teachers. They miss their peers. And kind of like everything else, I mean, people want it to be back to the way that it was. But understanding, you know, that parents need to be keeping their kids home when they're sick. And I do agree with the shift in policy where it used to be 100% attendance was the goal. And this has been going on since I was a kid. It's sort of been evolving where I don't know what happened to not staying home when you're to having kids stay home when they're sick, because everybody needs to. That's the number one thing I think that we can all do is stay home when we're sick.
Yeah. What are school administrators and teachers telling you about what this fall might look like and what their biggest issues are?
Again, I have a call today with one of my administrators. I have a call later this week. So we deliberately set these calls up so that we would have a little bit more information when we're doing them, because they've already finished the school year and the guidance is now coming out. So I am not here. I've not had a whole lot of direct input. So I'm looking forward to that and looking forward to being able to get them information that they need, but really DPI needs to come first. And that's why we put that language in the COVID response bill to require that guidance by June 30th.
Representative Loudenbeck, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate the opportunity.
Amy Loudenbeck is a Republican who represents 31st Assembly District, including parts of Rock and Walworth counties. Just ahead, an economist discusses the national recession and what recovery might look like in the months or years ahead. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report. You're listening to the Ideas Network.